Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, what's up? It's 3 o'clock. It's time for Meet and Make-A. And today, we have a very special guest, and I would say you're a world celebrity DJ all over, you know.
Yeah, this guy's I refer to myself as world celebrity.
Yeah, yeah.
In my private time, yeah.
We have Damien Higgins here. Say hi.
Hey, my name is Damien Higgins. I am a DJ. My DJ name is Diesel Boy. And yeah, I live locally here in Brooklyn.
Nice, nice. And let's see here. Where do we want to get started? Like, who in your family was the cook?
You know, growing up, my mom was the cook, but I was pretty much raised on a steady diet of Kraft mac and cheese, Oscar Mayer hot dogs, frozen bagged things that you cook in water, like chipped beef. So I was pretty much raised on a very prepared food, American cheap diet.
Nice.
And then it wasn't until I actually got older, like much older, that I decided that I really actually enjoyed more refined, delicious, creative food.
Yeah, have you always been... I know there's like a secret inside you that has always wanted to be a chef. And you've kind of had this music career for so long. And a lot of people think that you're just getting into food, but I know for a fact you've always been into it.
I mean, you know, when I was young, my mom did have one of these classic orange Betty Crocker cookbooks. And I used to look through it all the time and look at all the pictures and just think about like making that food. So I was always had like a fascination with food, but I always thought I had a really poor palate. I really only appreciated basically bad prepared food. But yeah, when I started getting into food, I realized that, you know, if I had gotten into it maybe a little bit earlier around the time when I got into DJing, which was 21 years ago, I probably would have pursued being a chef because there's a lot of similarities between coming up with recipes and cooking and creating stuff from scratch, that there's like a lot of similarities between that and what I do with DJing, you know, combining music together, you know, disparate ingredients and creating something super special. There's something that's, you know, greater than the sum of its parts, so to speak. Yeah. And just that kind of creativity. So yeah, I feel like maybe in another life I would have been a chef.
It's crazy now because so many people, like, you know, back when we were starting our music careers or whatever we did, it would be so cool to, like, you know, be in a band or be a DJ, and now everyone wants to be a chef.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, now that food TV has taken off so hard in the past 6-7 years, definitely. But yeah, back when I started DJing, you know, this really wasn't in my life so much like it is now. So yeah, DJing it was.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever made a product or anything? Have you ever made your own jelly or anything like that?
Oh yeah, the thing is, I travel so much that I typically eat out a lot. Uh-huh. And a lot of times when it comes to cooking, I love cooking, but a lot of times when it comes to cooking, it's kind of like, especially in New York where there's so many options, it's either I can go to the store, buy some ingredients and make something, or I can just go eat something. And a lot of times I'm kind of too lazy in a way to cook, but I really enjoy having dinner parties and like really trying to come up with really complicated menus because I get inspired by all the places that I eat at when I'm on the road. So when I come home, that's kind of where I set the bar for myself, is trying to take all this inspiration from all these crazy dishes I've had over the past month or so and then try to put my spin on that level of cooking. I have not made jellies. I've made pickles mm-hmm. before. Took a pickling class at Brooklyn Kitchen.
Oh, nice. Was that with McClure's or was that with Rick's?
It was McClure's.
Okay.
Which was actually pretty inspirational. And what else have I done? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't made any like products like that besides pickles, but I've cooked.
What kind of pickles did you make?
Just regular, not super spicy, like spicy dill pickles. Yeah, nice. They were good though. They turned out really good.
I took a class there with it was with Rick from Rick's Picks. It was how to make his fat beets.
Oh yeah,
you know,
fat beets are good. But yeah, I mean, I've made, you know, any type of food under the sun, I've tried to make it. And I feel like at this point, usually when people come over and I'm like, let's cook, I usually present them with, you know, you just tell me anything you can come up with on the top of your head and I can probably make it.
Yeah.
Once you learn the basics, it's all a matter of just kind of spinning it.
Yeah, when's the cookbook coming out?
It's funny, you know, I actually had lunch 2 weeks ago with Grace Parisi. She's the recipe editor at Food & Wine Magazine, and mm-hmm. we're discussing some things maybe that they would do a story on me for Food & Wine Magazine, strangely enough. And one of the things she discussed was potentially a book idea for her and I to work on. So there is no cookbook in the works, but if things keep going the way they're going, maybe in the next couple of years I might like make that a project of mine and go into it.
Speaking of our regular listeners, Rachel is in Italy now working on Lou DiPaolo's cookbook, so that's why she's not here.
Oh, nice.
My co, the other host of the show.
Oh, Lou DiPaolo, nice.
Yeah, she's in Italy with him for 17 days. Oh, yeah.
That's going to be an amazing trip.
Yeah. So, speaking of, like, I know you travel all over the world, and let's just stick to America. Like, name one small town in the middle of nowhere that you just, there's that one sandwich that, like, not New York, exclude New York and
exclude
LA.
New York.
Yeah.
That's kind of a hard question to answer because, usually when I play out, I don't really play tiny cities, so right. I don't really get a chance to go to tiny cities. I mean, there are places, I can name some other cities that I like food in.
Well, yeah, okay. So, I mean, like, in your travels, because you mostly fly from city to city. Sure. You don't really drive like a tour.
Or train, maybe.
Right. But, like, if there's, like, one big city, like Portland or anywhere in particular, that you just, like, when you get there, you're like, yes.
Right.
You
know? I would have to say, off the top of my head, I mean, I don't know if this sounds going to sound cliche to some people, but when I go to Los Angeles, they have a pizza at Pizzeria Mozza, which is essentially these special tomatoes, Bianca di Napoli tomatoes. And they're from this guy, Chris Bianco, from Pizzeria Bianco in Phoenix. It's a pizza made with those tomatoes, olive oil, salt, and oregano. And that's it. It's a vegan pizza. And every time I go to Los Angeles, I have to get that pizza.
Nice.
And it's, considering all the pizza that I've had, all the pizza here in New York especially, that pizza just stands out as something just spectacular.
Yeah, I was reading something that what was it you did the lasagna story for? Who was that?
That was Complex Magazine. They have a new website called firstwefeast.com.
Yeah, because your food and your love for food is like steaks and lasagna and like these, like, I noticed this trend of like heavy things that you tend to gravitate towards.
Yeah, I think it's because, again, it's because of my background. I mean, I was raised with prepared American food, I used to like to eat Chef Boyardee right out of the can.
Nice.
So when it comes to food that I like to cook, I tend to skew towards, I like all kinds of food, but in my personal life, I skew towards comfort food, mm-hmm. heavy foods. I especially like southern food, biscuits, pimento cheese, fried chicken, things like that. But yeah, I wrote this piece for First We Feast, and essentially I kind of, when it comes to stuff in general for me, I get pretty fixated on something. And when I get fixated on something like I did with DJing, I try to go as hard as I can into it. So I had this lasagna at Teresi Italian Specialties. It was on their first menu.
Mm-hmm.
And it like blew me away. I mean, it was like a life changer for me. And I'd always liked lasagna, but this was like something special. And I went there a few times and had it, and then all of a sudden it was off the menu. And I would call in, and they said, "Oh yeah, when it gets colder, we're gonna get this eggplant. We're gonna take eggplant parm off and put it back on." And it never went back on the menu. So this story was basically me on a quest to either get it back on the menu, get the recipe, or try to recreate it on my own. And to this day, I supposedly am gonna get this recipe off of the chef. It's just a matter of like pulling a few strings and hopefully it's going to happen. My quest will be over.
Yeah, that would be great. Have you noticed, like, now you're talking about this lasagna. Now, 10 years ago when you were touring and doing all this music stuff, I mean, you still are, but what I'm saying is, like, is it easier now for you to get food like that lasagna or like good food everywhere now, like at the airports and stuff? Or
it depends on the airport. I mean, yeah. There are airports, the food options are extremely meager at best. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot more good food out there. And plus I pay a lot more attention to like where I eat. I do a lot of research before I go to a city. I have a giant list of like all these cities and all these restaurants to eat at. And every time I read about a new restaurant or something, I'll put it in my list.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm either, I have my list or I do the research. So I kind of really go out of my way to make sure that if I'm going to have a meal in a certain city, that it's like the best meal that I can get. Because, for a long time I would travel to cities and I really wouldn't experience anything about the city except for the party or the rave I was DJing at.
Right.
So I kind of figured out once I got into food, like, hey, I could go eat at one of these unique special restaurants that this city has to offer and kind of experience a little bit of the city.
And then also
that.
A lot of it depending, because your sets, like, you're not, like a normal band show would go from like 8 to like maybe 11.
Sure.
You would be a late night DJ, so you would have the time to, you know, go and eat and then digest the food and then perform.
Right, absolutely. I mean, a lot of times I don't go on until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, so... Yeah, I can easily have a nice meal. The only problem is if I go out and, you know, say have a few glasses of wine at dinner, I finish dinner and then I have like 3 hours to kill before my set, and then I usually feel like I need to take a nap, and then I'll wake up and feel pretty haggard at the party. But that's the only kind of pitfall. But yeah, you're right. Because of my schedule, I can, you know, I can take the time to have these meals.
Yeah, what was it? A long time ago, you were on some show in Philadelphia where you made a steak.
Yeah, that was a show that was on a network called Burly Bear Network, which was a college only network. And so the show's idea or the theme was, back then I really didn't know much about cooking.
Tell us about the steak that you
made. Yeah, it was ridiculous. Actually, I mean, my cooking was like college dorm guy cooking. I had a George Foreman grill. So they told me, hey, you know, we want to come on the show. And the idea is that you're going to cook with the host. And while you're cooking, you guys are going to have an interview. And I said, I don't really cook, but I'll make a steak. So I made this really terrible steak on my George Foreman grill. And then I also made these elephant ears, these kind of funnel cake type things in the deep fryer. But, you know, if that was approached for that same concept nowadays, the show would have gone 100% different. But back then, I mean, I was cooking on a George Foreman grill, so it was as lowbrow as you could possibly get.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's the changes. And it's just such a short period of time for all this. And What was the last show? There's these guys in Canada that you were just a judge for something.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, what you were doing there.
Right. So, you know, it was actually maybe about a little over a week ago, I got a phone call from my agent. My agent shares space with this company called The Collective, this management company in LA. And I guess the Epic Mealtime guys from Montreal, they were going to start doing this season of this kind of like a cooking competition. And it's not a parody of a cooking competition, but it's kind of like an extreme funny version of a cooking competition, like Chopped. And so they approached my agency and said, do you know anyone that from the agency, any DJs that might be interested in being a guest judge? And of course, you know, my agent was like, I got the guy for you, my friend Damien, Diesel Boy, blah, blah. So I flew out to LA on Monday or Sunday night, and then Monday did the show. It was me, the guy from Epic Mealtime, Harley, and this comedian, Andy Milonakis. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was like we had two guys competed. There was like a secret selection of ingredients, and the riff that, you know, the difference is that, you know, while they're cooking, we're supposed to like basically holler at them and just crack jokes, and we're doing shots of mezcal and bourbon the whole time they're cooking. I mean, it was a pretty interesting experience. I will say though that at the end of it, I saw what the chefs had made. I tasted the food, judged it, but I kind of realized, especially since the food that they are known for, the Epic Mealtime guys, is really heavy food, like you said, that I like.
Yeah.
And so it's a good chance that if there is a season two, that I'm going to be back on the show, but I'm going to be competing to take the crown. I think that I could cook that food pretty well, and I'm going to test myself. So hopefully that happens, because I want to see if I can hang or not.
Yeah, I'm sure you could. I mean,
I watch enough food TV, so I'm always like, you always watch the TV shows where they're tasting food and judging. I'm always like, damn, I wish I knew what that food tasted like.
Have you ever seen any of their old shows?
I saw their first one that kind of put them on the map. I haven't seen all of them because they put out a lot of content, but I've probably seen a dozen of their shows. Yeah. I mean, they're funny. I know, like I said, after being on the show and watching their thing, that I can definitely hang in that kind of cuisine.
Yeah, what was back to making something. If you were to make a product, if you were to actually, like, you know, get your certification, you know, and get a kitchen, what would you desire to make the most?
Oh, you mean something I would sell?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, lately, one of the things that I've gotten into are drinking vinegars. And I was just out at a restaurant called Baca Mercat in Los Angeles, and they have a giant menu of sweet and sour drinks, or basically vinegar-based drinks. And every time I go there, I always have like two or three different ones because I haven't even tried them all. They're so good. But essentially, if I could figure out how to, like, you know, make vinegar, a friend of mine, this guy Jonathan Sawyer from Greenhouse Tavern in Cleveland, we hung out recently, and he's telling me that he makes his own vinegar, and I was pretty inspired by talking to him about that. So if I were to do something, I would really like to look into making, like vinegar, like drinking vinegars that you would combine with soda and have like a refreshing drink.
Yeah.
That's definitely the thing I'm into at the moment.
Well, we're going to take a little break here and talk more about vinegar when we come back.
All right.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
It is 3:24, and we are here with Damian Higgins, a.k.a. DJ Diesel Boy. I forgot what day it was. Can you believe that?
I know.
Let's brush back on this vinegar here. Now, that's amazing, because vinegar is one of my favorite things that I love to put on everything. I cook it. I dump it in with greens when I saute them. Every green you can imagine, I just drown it with vinegar. And And my favorite vinegar that I'm getting right now are all the house-made vinegars from Brooklyn Kitchen. Have you had any of those yet?
Actually, I have not. I didn't know they made them.
Yeah. Harry makes them. He makes them they make them with all Brooklyn beer as well. They have a stout, they have a summer ale, and whatever seasonal beer that Brooklyn has at the time, that's what they make, you know. So what would you do? Like, would you make a spicy pear vinegar?
I don't know. Again, I probably would focus more on I would say drinking vinegars, which are not as potent. But again, I mean, you know, vinegar making, I'd really don't know much beyond, you know, there has to be, I think, a mother, and it's like a complicated process or semi-complicated process. I haven't done the research on it, but this is something that I think the next time I see Jonathan, I'm going to maybe get some more nuts and bolts of like what actually he does, because it would be something I would like to pursue checking out. You know, the funny thing is, most of my life, my palate sucked. I really didn't like vinegary things, and I used to hate salt and vinegar potato chips. I would not even want to have them touch my hands, because it just bothered me. And then one day I was literally walking down the street in Manhattan, and I was thinking about how much I enjoyed the ketchup potato chips that you could get in Canada at the time. I think you can get them here now, but you'd only get them in Canada. I was like, man, I really like those tangy ketchup potato chips. And then I was like, wait a minute, why wouldn't I like salt and vinegar potato chips? And so I did an immediate right turn into a bodega, bought a pack of salt and vinegar chips, ate them, and was just like, it was that one moment. I was like, now I love salt and vinegar potato chips. And ever since then, I like to put vinegar in everything. Yeah. I love tangy stuff.
Yeah, I can just like, I just put vinegar on a spoon and just sip it.
I don't do that. I do have like Bragg's apple cider vinegar. It's supposed to be really healthy for you. I've drank it straight, but it's definitely cooks the palate a little bit. It's hot.
Yeah.
Spicy.
I love cooking with it too. It's such a, you know, amazing thing. I mean, it's so much better than I love olive oil, but I prefer vinegar more. You know, olive oil is also a lot harder to make.
Right. Yeah. olive oil is very difficult to make. You need to have the right equipment for it.
So yeah, what else is going on?
Let's see. Well, I mean, it's, you know, from my day to day, I mean, my DJing has been incredibly busy. I'm playing in Greensboro tomorrow. We leave very early.
Where's that?
Greensboro, North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I got to look at my list of restaurants there to see what's. Yeah. I haven't done my research yet to see where I'm going to eat there tomorrow.
Now, when you're making music, do you like just order a pizza, or you know, do you like to cook at home? Do you like to not eat while you make music?
Well, I find actually that when I'm working on music, I tend to eat a lot. There's always, you know, because there's like, you know, it's stressful trying to come up with ideas when you're in the studio, because a lot of it doesn't just flow out of me naturally. You have to like really kind of concentrate and just kind of look for inspiration. So a lot of times I'm snacking on.
Is your studio in your house, or you have another?
Well, actually, you know, I work on my laptop when I produce stuff. Uh-huh. Like I do like intros for my mixes and whatnot. But a lot of times when I'm producing music, I usually collaborate with somebody. Like recently, I've collaborated with this a fellow producer named Bear, who's on my label Subhuman. And when we're at his place, Yeah, we just eat random stuff. I mean, I don't. I'm definitely not cooking while I'm in the studio. I need like to cook it. I need to kind of like chill out and relax. And you know, I'm not really chilled out or relaxed when I'm working on music.
Yeah, would you say DJs are normally, or are they're naturally more into food than you would say like a regular musician, like a band?
I can't say that. No, I mean, I'm kind of a rare breed. I mean, I do know some people in the electronic music scene, the DJ scene, that are into food. I definitely have turned some people on to food, some of my friends and whatnot. But in general, most of the people that I know on the road that play out, they're not really that into food. They eat kind of whatever. I mean, I think they're just kind of beat down by having to travel all the time, and they're eating, you know, McDonald's at 9 a.m. at the airport.
Yeah. So I saw a woman on the subway eating a fillet of fish the other day, and I was just like,
you know what's funny? I've never eaten a fillet of fish.
Oh, you got to at least once.
Well, I, at this point, if I was going to eat something like a fillet of fish, there's a lake trout we have in Williamsburg, which kind of like the upscale version. Even though it's not upscale, but it's like the more refined version of a fillet of fish.
Yeah, I think that's Joe's new place. Yep. Yeah, it's really good. What was it? Vinegar and there's got to be something else that you would want to make. Raise. Would you want to raise a pig? Or
I mean, to be honest, like it's my schedule is so complicated right now. Yeah. I'm busy that I haven't even put my head in that zone. However, you know, as things keep progressing with me and the food scene and whatnot, I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe I might have a second career later in life as doing something involved in the food industry.
Yeah, that'd be great because, I mean, your promotion right now for promoting good food with all of your fans is, like, so important and valuable. And that's what's, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on the show because you're promoting good food to everybody.
Sure.
And that's, you know, something that a lot of people in your position normally don't do as much.
I mean, I'm, you know, it a call comes down to like what inspires you and what excites you, what you're passionate about. I mean, I'm really passionate about good food. One of my favorite things, you know, besides having dinner parties at my house, is I just like going out to eat with my friends. You know, I'm like famous. It's like kind of a running joke, but I like to share my food when I'm eating with people. It's like, you know, try this, but I usually like feed people with my fork. So the joke is you've been forked by Damien. And I can happily say that I've forked chefs, people, Food and Wine magazine. And now it's kind of like I get a kick out of it.
What was the last chef you hung out with that you had dinner with? That you just posted. I forget what it was. It was on Twitter somewhere. You know?
It was Jonathan Sawyer was probably the last one that I actually sat down with.
Where did you guys eat at?
We ate at we at Minetta Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
He had never had the Black Label burger, so it was with him and one of his head chefs at one of his places called Noodle Cat in Cleveland. I kind of gave them some options of what do you want to try, and the one of them was like, you know, what I think the best burger I've ever had is, which is the Black Label burger. So I took him there for that. After that, where have I? No other the chefs since then.
Hanging around with, you know, these chefs and food people, like, it's gotta, you know, really get you thinking, you know, like, wow, I can really, you know, get into this now.
And it's just inspirational. I mean, you know, I feel very lucky just in my life in general. I've been able to hang out with some really creative people, not just chefs, but, you know, photographers, graphic designers, you know, fellow producers, writers. And so, yeah, when I'm, you know, because I'm so into food, to hang around people like that is just really inspirational. Like, I try not to interrogate some of these people, but I always have like a million questions. I just like to try to soak up as much information as I can. Plus, you know, I'm always trying to learn something from
them. So I see a food book, I see a vinegar, and soon maybe even a cocktail. Tell me more about your making of cocktails.
You know, I got into cocktails a while ago. I used to not drink when I was young. I was probably one of the only kids in high school that never drank beer at the school parties on the weekends. But I got into cocktails, and I really started getting into cocktails. I ran into Jim Meehan at PDT right after they opened, and became friends, and he really inspired me to really dig into cocktails. And yeah, nowadays, I mean, I have a ton of cocktail books at home. I really, much in the same way that I enjoy food, I do kind of hunt down the cool, you know, cool cocktail speakeasy type places in other cities. I enjoy going out here in New York. Some of my favorite local bars would be something like this at the County Room on Monday nights. One of my favorite places. There's also like Maison Premier. You have Dona. There's just a lot of places. Cocktail-wise, I do actually have a cocktail. Funny you asked that. I do have a cocktail that I like to order. Mm-hmm. I will give you the secret recipe right here on the air. What it is it's basically a 2 ounces of Smith & Cross rum, which is a high-proof rum, a quarter ounce of Grey B maple syrup, some bitters, and then a nice pinch of salt. So it kind of tastes like a a lifesaver, butter rum lifesaver from like you'd get around the holidays. Mm-hmm. It's like a salted maple rum. But that's usually my go-to. If they have those ingredients at a bar, I usually kind of stick with that. But,
nice.
But yeah, I love cocktails. They're awesome and delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
And have intoxicating.
Do you have like a whole array of alcohol at home? Like,
I did, and know. I drank it. Yeah, I went through a phase. When I was really experimenting with trying out recipes and whatnot, I bought and had a fully stocked bar, and since then I've kind of rinsed it out. And nowadays, usually if I want to make cocktails,
rinsed it out,
to use the drum and bass phrase. Now, if I want to make drinks, I just go to the store, get a couple ingredients, and just make stuff, or I just. The go-to is I'll get like a whiskey and some ice and just drink that on the rocks. It's kind of the easy way to do it.
Yeah. Do most people in your scene they are into cocktails as well, like DJs and stuff. But like, do most of your friends that come over when you work on music together, do you guys make a cocktail before you work on a beat, or you want to keep a clean face?
No, it's always easy to drink anytime. Day drinking is something I do enjoy, but usually if I want to be focused on something work related, I just don't like to drink. It just kind of makes it harder for me to concentrate and focus enough. Yeah. And yeah,
Do you have a big collection of bitters?
I have maybe a dozen, and I have some like random things. But yeah, like I said, I went through a phase where I had a lot of stuff, and then I just had people over, and we kind of annihilated my bar cart. And so now it's looking quite meager at this point.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's awesome that you do the cocktail thing. You actually invited me out to a bar one time, but I had to work.
Oh, I did.
it was an event that you were playing 80s music and doing
right.
cocktails.
So I have a friend of mine. His name's Max Pazuniak, and he does something like this on Monday nights at the Canyon Room. It's his night. Uh-huh. And the cool thing about that night is he does an original menu every Monday, totally new menu. Has a soundtrack to go along with it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, it's always every week you're going to get something new. So I collaborated with him on a couple nights, but the last one, the one I invited you to, we did a 80s movie themed night. We had, popcorn and paper bags on the bar.
And this is something you help him curate?
This is something that I worked with him on. We got together and developed six cocktails for the menu. I designed the menu, I graphic designed the menu, made it look like movie logos from the 80s. Mm-hmm. I did a soundtrack of 80s music that would have fit right along with it. And it was just a fun little creative little thing to do. And yeah, I think one of the ones that I came up with, besides the salt and maple rum drink, is I did some drink. It was a riff on an old beverage called Switchel, which is like a vinegar based drink. So it was like kind of like a Asian Switchel. It had like black vinegar, and it had a Szechuan peppercorn honey ginger syrup, and I just had some different things. But
oh, that
yeah,
sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. And I'm hoping to do more of those things with him. Like I said, I'm always into just doing cool little creative projects, and
that's a cool collaboration of like music and food. And have you ever had any of your music in that counting room thing?
I haven't, but we really haven't. I've kind of threatened to come down and play some heavy bass music, but it's kind of like a kind of a laid back thing. Yeah. I mean, though it's funny, I'm going to be DJing a party after New Year's for the Empeon restaurants that Alex Stupak does. So he's doing a Christmas party though after Christmas, and he's going to have a
where's that at?
I think it's going to be a taqueria. Mm-hmm. I had dinner at Cosina last night, and he was threatening to have 500 people there, and he was going to have the drum and bass room, which I was going to be DJing. And I'm like, are you sure? He's an old drum and bass fan. I'm like, you want drum and bass? He's like, hell yeah. So there will be some drum and bass that I'm going to be beating people over the head with in the food industry that I'm sure they'll be scared to death of.
Nice.
Should be interesting.
Well, that's awesome. And, I don't know what else to say. Like, this guy does it all. He does cocktails. He does world travel. He's everywhere. But
I'll say this.
But in New York,
yeah,
and where you live around here, you just said you went to Number 7 Sandwich Shop, and you were telling me about this special sandwich that they make that they don't make anymore. What was it again?
So what happened was, is Eater did a bodega week. So all these restaurants kind of made bodega themed things, and Number 7 Sub had a riff on the bacon, egg, and cheese roll, and it was soft boiled eggs cut in half with sesame seeds, smoked ketchup, feta cheese, Canadian bacon. I think that was it, and it was absolutely one of the most delicious sandwiches I've ever had. And so I talked to Tyler, the guy who owns it, And I asked him, I requested that he put it on the menu, and he said it was a pain in the ass to make. But then I saw him today when I went to lunch there, and he came up and was like, "What's going on?" I'm like, "So we got a new sandwich coming up?" And he's like, "Yeah, but not the one you want." Because he,
see, I think you have a calling here to make this sandwich.
I can definitely harass someone to death, so I might have to like seriously go into competition. But yeah, I love Number 7. It's like some of the most creative sandwiches I've ever had. Great place to have lunch.
Well, that's going to be our show today. And I want to thank Damien for coming on, and you can check him out online. Just do a Google search and
go to facebook.com/dieselboy. There's a lot of links to free mixes and random ramblings.
And also stalk him on Twitter and find out what he's writing about food wise.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, DJ Dieselboy. I like to post about all my meals and drunken thoughts at 3 in the morning.
Nice. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
Cheers.
Hey.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.